Hey, it's Sprague here. Really appreciate you listening. You're about to get some podcast excellence. It's presented by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
Boys, put down your utensils. I want to talk to you about something real quick. If there's anything that you want to talk about, any kind of secrets, now's the time to put it on the table, okay? And if you tell me, we're not going to be mad.
This is Dirt and Sprague.
I went to the petting zoo and I let the goat lick my honey.
Promise you wouldn't get mad, okay? They're being honest.
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
One time I put a firefly in my butt.
Why?
To make my farts glow.
Oh, God.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080.
I touched myself to Drew Carey on the bus, right?
God. Okay, that's enough. Stop, please.
The Fan.
Let me tell you what I want.
All right, welcome back in. Hour number two, Dirt and Sprague here on Portland Sports Leader, 1080 The Fan. We have a loaded second hour, a lot to get to. If you missed the first, 1080thefan.com, Les Schwab Tires podcast. And we'll start by talking about the Oregon and Utah game, 2:30 kick down in Salt Lake City. The Oregon Ducks looking to win their second game in a row in Utah, looking to get a big win in conference. And joining us now on the Catlin Capital Hotline is the head coach of the Utah Utes, Kyle Whittingham. Coach, thanks so much for the time joining us in Portland. We always appreciate it. How did you feel about how your team played after you lost your starting quarterback and what you saw from your backup?
Well, we didn't play particularly well before or after, you know, in my opinion. Defensively, we've been pretty good this year. We've been real good at times, but we did not do our usual stuff against Arizona State, and credit them. They had a great plan coming in. They were ready to play, and so a lot of it had to do with what they were doing, but defensively it just wasn't us. Gave up a bunch of rush yards. We don't usually do that. Gave up a bunch of points, and so that was disappointing. As far as Tyler Huntley's injury, happened a little past the midway point of the third quarter, I believe it was, and Jason Shelley, our next guy up, came in and promptly moved us down the field and engineered a field goal drive, and then after that we couldn't get much going, but just overall, not our best performance, and credit, like I said, ASU with doing a great job.
Well, and I imagine, Coach, that's tough where you got to throw a kid in and he hasn't played a ton this year and he gets in there. And as you mentioned, you saw some positives and some negatives. What have you been working on with him this week trying to get him ready now to make his first start?
Yeah, well, first of all, that's exactly right. He's getting his first start. He knows that, going in, taking all the reps with the one offense. So that's a lot better situation than just coming in, the middle of the third quarter, emergency-wise. And so what we got to do and what we have done is tailor the offense to his strengths. There's not a big difference between him and Tyler as far as what they do best and their skill sets, but Jason is, he's a competitive kid. He's just a redshirt freshman, so he's been with us his second year now. He did a great job running this very similar style of offense in high school, spread attack. A lot of common ground between what he did in high school and what we're doing now. So he's going to have to step up for us, and everyone else around him is going to have to rally and pick up the slack, and that's just how it goes.
Yeah, we're talking with the head coach of Utah, Kyle Whittingham. He gets ready to take on the Oregon Ducks. You can catch the game here on 1080 The Fan, 2:30 kick this Saturday. There's something that I was thinking about the other day with you, Coach, because I think it kind of relates with what people are seeing right now in Eugene. And Mario Cristobal in year one, they get off to a good start, and then offensively they kind of go into this funk a little bit, and people are still concerned and worried and questioning things. I know you taken over for Urban in, 2005, I think was your first official season down in Salt Lake, and you guys went from undefeated to 7-5. Take us back to that time for you where maybe people question you and people wonder, are you the right guy for the job? What goes into a takeover or when a guy steps into that role for the first time to build the program in his image?
Yeah, well, I guess every situation is a little bit different, when you take over. And, we had come off an undefeated season with Urban. But that same year we lost, our quarterback Alex Smith declared early for the draft. Every assistant coach went their separate ways except for one. Me and Gary Anderson were the only two coaches left standing when all the dust had settled. And so we had a lot to put together. And so put together a really good coaching staff, and we had the quarterback, young Brian Johnson, who was a 17-year-old true freshman backing up Alex Smith that year that we went to the Sugar Bowl, Fiesta Bowl. And so I'm not saying we were starting over because we had some good players, but there was quite a bit of turnover, and so tough act to follow. When you go undefeated, I mean, how can you top that? So it was the bar was set pretty high, but we're able to go 7-5, as you mentioned, that first year, and then continue to recruit and build, and eventually, I guess it was 2 or 3 years later, we were able to run the table again and go to the Sugar Bowl. So that kind of quieted down everybody. But you're right. There's comparisons that are going to be drawn, and why are we not doing this as well as we used to, or that? And so you just got to give people a chance, I believe, and things don't happen overnight. Typically, I guess sometimes they do, but not typically. And it's a process. It's a process that takes some time. And in this day and age, that's one thing you're not going to get is a lot of time. Typically, people expect instant results, especially with the salaries that are being paid and that type of thing. So that's where I was, and that's what transpired. And then here I am. Fortunately, 14 years later, just feel very blessed to be able to be in the same spot, in the same location for that amount of time. A lot of coaches would have, had 5, 6, 7 stops in that period of time. So I felt very fortunate to been able to be at Utah as long as I have.
Well, and a big one for you guys this weekend with the way the Pac-12 South race looks. I don't know if I've ever seen it this kind of jumbled together where everybody still has a chance. And your opponent coming in is Oregon. And offensively early in the year, I think a lot of people were raving about the way they looked and then hit a little bit of a funk. The game at Washington State in the first half, they struggled to move the ball against Arizona. Then the special teams and defense helped them a lot last week. What have you seen now that you're watching some film on Oregon from them offensively, some strengths and weaknesses that you're noticing?
Well, they certainly have talent like they have every year since we've been in the Pac-12. I mean, there's no difference there. They got a bunch of really good players. The quarterback is tremendous. He's as advertised. I mean, talking about him being the first QB taken, I guess if he were to come out this year. I know he's only a junior. And then, they got the receiver who's playing so well, the Mitchell kid, and he's a tough matchup for anybody, catching a bunch of balls. And the Verdell kid is doing a nice job running the football. And then, the offensive line, it all starts up front. I don't care who you are. If you're not solid up front, everything's going to be difficult. It looks like they've got another really good offensive line in place.
Yeah. Kyle Whittingham, our guest, the head coach of Utah, with a couple minutes here, joining us on the home of the Oregon Ducks as they get ready to take on Oregon. 2:30 kick. You can catch it here on The Fan. I'm just looking forward to the matchup, Coach. I think this is going to be a great game. What have you made of the conference, though? We kind of cape up for the conference on our show because everybody just wants to be so negative about it. And I know it's not a perfect conference, but how do you feel it weighs in with some of the other Power Fives out there this season?
Well, I think it's the most balanced. I think from 1 to 12, I think that you won't find another Power Five conference that has the competitive nature and I don't want to say parity because that's kind of a negative connotation, but in this league, you better be ready to play every single week because anybody is capable of beating anybody. I mean, that's just a realistic statement, and what that doesn't bode well for is the national perception and because everyone wants those unblemished teams or the one loss team. Although we do have Washington State, who's sitting there at one loss right now, that's in the top 10, inside the top 10. But I think that a lot of times you get a negative spin for being balanced, and you almost get punished in the rankings and that type of thing. And that's why I think it's so critical that eventually, hopefully sooner rather than later, the playoffs expand to an 8-team format, which would allow each of the Power Five champions to go, have that automatic bid, because it's not fair, for a conference that is very balanced and cannibalizing each other to be left out of that, in my opinion.
Amen to that. I love that notion. I hope we get there sooner rather than later. And I mean, you look at where your team's at right now, 9 games in, 3 games to go, starting with Oregon this weekend, right there in the hunt for the South. And you guys have been knocking on that door ever since you came into the conference, it feels like, just trying to get over that hump. What would that mean for you and for this program this year if you're able to finish strong and get that South Division championship?
Well, it'd be huge. Obviously our full attention right now is only on Oregon because there's still a lot of football left to be played. But that is definitely the next, goal or the next, just checkpoint for our program is to get that South Division title. And we've been close. One year we tied for it, but lost the tiebreaker. And so, that's our challenge, and the onus is on us to get it done. And we're still in the hunt right now, although we don't control our own destiny exactly. I mean, we got to have a little help, but all we got to do is try to take care of our business, and then whatever happens, happens.
All right, get you out here on this one, Coach. I never thought I would see the day because you're our clear-cut number one, but now there is a guy in Eugene who played football. He's a big dude. Could Mario Cristobal take you in arm wrestling?
Arm wrestling. I don't know. I can tell you, I was the champ back at BYU. I was the arm wrestling team champ. So I don't know what that means, but that was always a strong suit. My dad was an incredible arm wrestler, so I think I got good genetics for arm wrestling.
Okay.
We'll have to see. Yeah.
I tell you, you might not know what it means, but I think you're kind of telling us you think you win. So there you go. All right.
No, I didn't say that. I just said I've been known to put up a pretty good arm wrestle.
Okay. Can we get that pregame? Is that possible? When you guys do your little pregame chat, you know,
that
just be
the
coin.
Yeah,
that's exactly. The
coin flip.
Whoever wins the ball. The arm wrestle gets the ball first.
All right.
See if we can get that arranged.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The head coach of Utah, Kyle Whittingham, always so gracious with his time. Catch him this week and take it on Oregon, 2:30 kick, and you'll catch it here on The Fan. Thanks so much for the time, Coach. We always appreciate it, and good luck this weekend.
Okay, thank you. Take care, guys.
All right, there we go. The head coach of the Utah Utes, Kyle Whittingham. I think he just said he would beat him.
He totally just said that.
He was
that.
Trying to downplay it because, you know, he always worried about something going in a headline. That's not going to make
any
headline.
The guy's got arm wrestling in his blood.
His arms are bigger than Cristobal's, too.
Oh, see, I don't know if I've ever seen his arms.
Oh, like, you haven't watched Utah. He wears, like, skin-tight polos.
He does. That's, yeah.
You didn't see him at the Pac-12 media days strutting around like, oh, I'm a vegan now and I've cut weight.
Wearing the tight shirt, walking around, being all intimidating.
I'm a big Whittingham guy, not only because I think he's a underrated coach in all of college football. I like the lifestyle that guy lives. Health is wealth.
Well, he's been there. It was crazy to hear him talk about his tenure and just how long he's been at Utah now. One of the longer tenured coaches in probably all of college football at this point. And it just, they keep knocking on the door. And one of these years, they're going to break it down. And it might be this year.
Well, I think that's the perspective. We can carry this over. Oregon, Utah playing this. We can talk about this a little bit. I think that's the perspective, too. For all the people questioning coaching decisions and where the program's at in Eugene, you need to bear in mind, Utah is a great example here. Undefeated, go to the Fiesta Bowl, and then Kyle Whittingham's first year, they go 7-5.
Yeah.
I know social media wasn't around like it is now. Guarantee there was still a lot of conversations thrown around. 3 years later, he was undefeated. That doesn't mean Cristobal will. I just think it's an interesting perspective to have if you're an Oregon fan out there. But we'll dive into this game. No Tyler Huntley. Does that matter for Utah? Talk about that next on The Fan.
This is Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
We had somebody text in at the Better You Today text line. Ask him about the quitter, Gary Anderson. We actually have. We talked to him not too long ago. When was that?
I think we talked to him right after.
It was last year.
Yeah.
They were either playing OSU or.
We had him on right after Gary Anderson quit. Not because of that, but it just that was the way
no,
the timing worked.
They played in
worked.
Eugene last year, so we talked to him going into the Oregon game last year, and we had brought up Gary Anderson, and
he defended him.
Pretty
He is he's a longtime friend. Yeah. There was no shock that when Gary Anderson found a job in football, that it was gonna be with Kyle Whittingham
right,
at
when
Utah.
When you have a guy you consider almost a brother,
right?
Very easy for that guy to call and say, "Hey, man, I have lost my way morally. I am not who I was. I've lost track of who I am.
Need some help here.
I need to get out of here. I need a restart, and Utah's always been our place." Very easy for me to see why a friend would go, "Okay, come on in. I still know, you know how to coach football. I know that didn't look great at OSU, but come on in. I'll welcome you in with open arms." So we asked him about that last year. He really didn't give us much. But no Tyler Huntley. Does that matter at all?
I mean, I think it has to.
Why?
Not that Tyler Huntley is a great quarterback, because he's not. I mean, their emphasis of winning is running the football and playing defense. That's what makes Utah Utah. But there's always the unknown of playing a kid. You know, there are backups and then there are terrible backups. Oregon went through this last year. I mean, you went from, obviously, the drop-off from Herbert to Burmeister is more than it is from Huntley to Shelley. But if you get a kid who can't complete passes at a consistent level, that cannot stretch a defense, that can't keep somebody honest, that helps Oregon tremendously. And again, not that Huntley was the best at doing that, but at least you had to, at least in some way, shape, or form, respect their passing game. He came into that ball game last week against ASU. They didn't score a point after he came in. He came in, I want to say, early on in the third quarter. It was a big goose egg for him. He was about 4 of 11 for 50 yards, and he threw a pick. And they became extremely one-dimensional in how you try and slow them down and stop them. And on top of that, if you are to point to a weak link of the Oregon defense, it's their secondary. You feel pretty decent about how they can play up front. Maybe they use four down linemen and go to a 4-3 like they did against Stanford this upcoming weekend to especially slow down that running game. But, yeah, this is a break for Oregon to face a backup quarterback.
I think it's a break. Here's the tough part for me. Oregon has not shown anything. I know they beat Cal, but again, 3-11 on the road since 2016. And we are talking about one of the best defenses in the conference. Now, I know ASU actually did pretty good job offensively against Utah, but now they're at home. Last week's on the road. Mm-hmm. You know, dealing with an injury in the moment is kind of a different thing than going, okay, we have a week now. We're ready.
Absolutely.
A little more prepared. I just wonder what Oregon's going to look like offensively now, because that continues to be the question. And Utah's rush defense, I think, is number one in the conference.
It is. They're only giving up 100 yards per game, and that's after giving up 250 last week to ASU. I mean,
that's an insane number to be giving up in college football. You can't run the ball. Are we thinking Herbert's going out there and slinging it? It's tough for me to imagine what Oregon can do.
Fair enough.
On the road, given what we've saw the last two times.
It's been ugly. It's been really ugly. The Washington State game was ugly. The Arizona game was ugly. You know, we're putting our parlay together for the weekend. I think we all love the under of this game. I think it's at 56. It's just hard for me to see this being a high-scoring game in either way. Utah playing with the backup quarterback, and Oregon with the way the offense has looked. I mean, they were the special teams in defense handed them points last week. And, you know, and for the most part, they capitalized on it. They ended up scoring 42, and then they had a couple of big plays in the fourth quarter, at least on their own, the long run from Tony Brooks-James and the deep shot to Dylan Mitchell. But before then, it was basically set up by another position group helping them out. And they're going to need that same kind of help this weekend. It really, I mean, if you like Oregon to win this game, I think you're just re-putting faith into Justin Herbert being able to throw the ball around a little bit. But if he plays the way that he has the last couple of weeks and he's struggling to complete passes, especially early in that game, and then they can't get the run game going, you see that snowball effect that you've seen the last couple of weeks.
What would a loss mean? Like, what's the reaction from Duck fan if they lose to a backup quarterback who didn't look good in a short amount of time a week ago? They lose again on the road.
I mean, I think you're still going to get people. There are people that are extremely frustrated and angry right now.
Because that opens the door for 7-5. That doesn't just guarantee maybe an 8-4, because you got ASU the week after.
That's not an easy game for them. ASU's a talented football team. Right. We've said it all year.
We know they can move the ball offensively. I'm really curious how this is going to end for Cristobal year one in the Oregon program.
The next 2 weeks are fascinating because I think both of them are winnable games and both of them are losable games. And it's, as you're mentioning, I mean, it's the difference between 9-3 and 7-5, and you're feeling completely different at the outcome. I think if you ask me what would a loss mean, what does the loss look like?
Right.
Does it look like Arizona?
Well, what if it's a field goal game?
I'm not going to lose my mind, and I don't think Duck fans should either. Utah is a quality football team. I think it's ridiculous they're not ranked in the top 25. This is a team that their only other losses were a close one. They almost beat Wazoo at Wazoo. They were in it against Washington for the entire game. They just couldn't generate enough offense to score. And then they lost it. Yeah, they had a clunker last weekend against Arizona State, but that's not who this football team is. And their quarterback got hurt in the third quarter. So I think it's a travesty that they're not ranked in the top 25. So this isn't a bad loss. It's not a great-looking one because you're facing a backup quarterback. But if you lose a close game and it's a back-and-forth ball game and you lose 28-24 or somewhere in that range, I don't think there's any need to panic right now.
Yeah, and I'm glad I was able to remember, because I jotted it down last night, to ask Whittingham, because I had looked at that football reference, and 7-5 after an undefeated year is like a, what the hell is going on here? But again, 3 years later, 08, They're in the Sugar Bowl.
You build in recruiting, and that's the thing that Duck fan has to remember with Crystal Ball. No matter if you finish 9-3, 7-5, or 8-4, you have to remember where this recruiting class is. There's now, on top of Justin Hopkins, there's a lot of national experts that are predicting the number one overall player in the country is going to commit to Oregon at some point. The Kayvon Thibodeau guy, that's now the wide consensus in college football.
A lot of national people are jumping
on
that. And
they've never had a number one. I mean, you're talking a game changer to get a defensive end of his abilities. You had landed Haloti Ngata when they got him was number two. De'Anthony Thomas when they got him was number five in the country.
Of the whole class, right? Not just their position.
No, the whole class, yeah. And you're talking about the number one consensus kid in the country potentially coming to Oregon. You got to give him a little bit of time.
All right, we got our NFL picks coming up at 2 o'clock. We'll talk about the Thursday night football game between Carolina at Pittsburgh. Actually looking forward to that one. Dirt has some NFL stat game. He hasn't explained it to me, which kind of leaves me a little more excited.
We're going to play a game. You got to find some game show music for this.
Okay. We'll get game show music game for show that. Music. And then coming up next, we'll go into the Pac-12 South race. Who the hell is the favorite to win the Pac-12 South right now? I have no idea. But we'll talk about it because we love the Pac-12. Next, but first, Joe with a sports update.
This is Dirt and Sprague, Gun 1080, The Fan.
Hey, welcome back at 135. Happy Thursday. Got to make our pro football picks, final hour of the show. Thursday night football is a pretty... Can we save this one for last? Is this a saver for last game?
A saver for laster game?
Yeah. Carolina-Pittsburgh. That's a decent little ball game for Thursday night.
Well, you asked a poll question. It is winning right now, and I love the people that are surprised by it. It's like, football is king. I try to tell people this that don't love football as much. They're like big Blazer basketball fans. Right. Maybe they love the Timbers. They're like, why don't you talk more about those? I'm like, I'm telling you.
Football's king.
Football is king, and it's not close. And like, not with the people I know. And then we get the ratings, and then we see the poll question results, and I'm like, see? People love them some football.
If you want to know what he's mentioning, we had a poll question at Dirt and Sprague on Twitter today. What are you going to watch most of tonight? Timbers Sounders, because there is a playoff MLS game tonight. Timbers Sounders.
What time is that match?
That kicks off at 7:30 on FS1.
Okay, 7:30 on FS1. Your Blazers and Clippers. Blazers are playing good. Blazer fever is here. It's officially Rip City Mania season.
Mm-hmm. I think their last home game before they go on a road trip.
Big road trip? No,
it's
Sunday.
Their second. Boston's their
that's
last.
Right.
Then they go on a six-game trip.
It's a playoff matchup.
There you go.
And then Thursday night football. So we said, which one are you going to watch the most of tonight? And currently Thursday night football is winning.
Well, this is where streaming kicks ass because now I have the ability on my big TV to put on Thursday night football. The Blazer game will be on my laptop as it starts. When Thursday night football ends, I will then put the Blazer game on the big screen. And then on my laptop, I will watch the Timbers.
Yeah, you should be able to watch the end of the last two because Thursday Night Football starts at what, 5:30, 5?
5:15-ish,
right? Yeah. So, I mean, that game will be over in the 8 o'clock-ish range, 8:30 maybe.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you'll be able to catch the end of the play if you just want to solely watch that game and it's a good one. You'll be able to flip over at early in the soccer and NBA game.
Joe, what channel is the Timber game on?
FS1.
Oh, that's perfect.
Get your Fox Sports Go app.
I have FS1 on PlayStation View.
There you go.
I will be doing exactly what I just said.
There you go. You know, we were just talking about Utah, and they are kind of they're an interesting team. You know, Buck or Dusty, I can't remember who it was, but one of them the other morning brought up the point of the team that always seems to be knocking on the door but then lets it slip through their fingers because they were mentioning Washington State was always that team, and now we'll see how the Apple Cup goes, but they're kind of controlling their own destiny right now. The team that I thought of when they were talking about that was Utah. I mean, Utah, how many years in a row now has Utah been there or in the driver's seat or they've had a chance and they've let it slip through their fingers? And most recently, the one that killed them was their loss last weekend. I mean, we'll see if they bounce back and beat Oregon this weekend. But you lose at ASU. You lose your quarterback likely for the rest of the season with the collarbone injury. And that just throws a huge curveball into the Pac-12 South race because before last weekend, it felt like it was Utah and then everybody else. They had dominated Arizona, a team who's somehow, some way still alive. They had dominated USC the week prior to that. This was a team that was setting up for their first Pac-12 championship appearance. Now, you know who controls their own destiny down there?
USC.
Arizona State.
That's what I was going to say. ASU.
What if I told you
it's a crapshoot at this point with the South.
What if I told you that in July? You know who's going to control their destiny with 3 weeks to go in the college football season in the Pac-12 South? Herm Edwards.
I didn't buy into Herm at all.
He is going to control his own destiny.
Can I say something without sounding like revisionist history here?
Go for it.
The one thing I did cite about Herm in year one at ASU is he may not be a good fit long term, and I'm still going to stick with that opinion. He had pieces to come into this season and be decent.
Oh, they have talent.
Right? Like, Manny Wilkins, for some reason, we talked about Herm Edwards. We talked about the way that he was not really coaching one side of the ball or the other, how the assistants were supposed to be the coaches, and he was supposed to be the CEO, and then they left, and then they had new assistants. The one thing we glossed over in the whole debacle of what ASU was doing was the fact that they still had N'Keal Harry and Manny Wilkins.
And what's the running back's name again?
Eno Benjamin.
Eno Benjamin, thank you.
And we didn't really talk much about Eno at all.
No, but he's a stud.
He's come on the scene. He's had a great year. Defensively, they've had some really good moments. You mentioned last weekend. I know it's a backup, but keeping Utah to 20 points, still pretty good. And we'll see what they can do this weekend in their game. But the thing about Herm is he had pieces to be decent this year, right? So this for me is not so much Herm. This is benefiting greatly from the talent you inherit. And I think the Herm thing will play its factor into next year when he has a new quarterback and the year after that. And then we'll really know who Herm Edwards is at ASU.
Didn't he just snag Chad Johnson's kid from out of Oregon State?
Yeah, but I talked to a couple people that follow recruiting in that.
Yeah.
I believe we also had Angie on.
Yeah, she mentioned that.
I'm not going to overreact like that's Chad Johnson 2.0.
The kid's not a five-star kid. Right. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I just thought that was – because I haven't followed too closely how he's done on the recruiting trail.
He ended up not being too bad last year when he had to come in. They fired
Todd Graham.
And when he got in there, everybody was laughing because they were dead last. They were below OSU. And I think as signing day was upon us, he closed at 36th in the country, and I want to say he was fourth or fifth in the conference.
Well, the crazy thing is right now, when you look at the South race, it is amazing how bad that division is. I think you can make an argument, and I haven't mathematically proven this, but I believe you can make an argument that everybody has a scenario in which they can win the South because Utah, USC, Arizona, and Arizona State all have three losses in conference.
Yep.
And then your bottom two teams are Colorado and UCLA, and they're both 2-4. And there's three games to go. So I think mathematically there might be a way to draw the map out for everybody to win. But the reason Arizona State controls their own destiny is they just beat Utah at home. Remember the week prior to that, they beat USC. They got a gift with backup quarterbacks in both of those games, but they won both of them. And they still have to play Arizona. So Arizona lost to USC. Arizona lost to Utah. And then you just start playing this round-robin game of Utah beat USC, but USC beat Arizona. You go around. The one team that has wins over the top two right now in the South is Arizona State because they beat them both head-to-head.
But USC, Utah also control it. If they win out, they're in.
No, because if Arizona State wins out, they have three conference losses, and they have the tiebreaker over both of them.
Right. Okay. So maybe is there a bye coming for one of those teams then?
So the reason why Arizona State's further down is because they're only 3-3 in conference. They played one less game to this point. So but they control their own destiny because they have the same number of losses and they have head-to-head wins over USC and Utah.
Fair point. You're right.
So they can, but they have to go to Oregon in a couple weeks. Still have to beat Arizona, who's playing better football right now.
Which one is worse? The South of the Pac-12, the other division in the Big Ten, or the other division opposite Clemson in the ACC, because they also, as divisions, are sitting with teams that are 5-4 or 6-3.
Okay, here's what you're dealing with. In the ACC Coastal, I'll give you the top three teams, okay? We'll rank and see which one's the worst. ACC Coastal is Pittsburgh at 5-4, Virginia at 6-3, and then Virginia Tech at 4-4. Okay, there's your top three there. Big Ten West is Northwestern at 5-4, Wisconsin at 6-3, Purdue at 5-4, and then you have the Pac-12 South of Utah, USC, Arizona, and Arizona State. They're all essentially tied.
My gut would say most people would say the Pac-12 is the worst one. But I think...
In a battle of head-to-heads, I think I would take the Pac-12 South over
the ACC?
Over the ACC Coastal.
Pitt played Notre Dame really well on the road.
They also got killed by UCF. Virginia or Virginia Tech are very good this year. And
no,
I was wrong.
Not.
I thought Virginia Tech was going to have a good year.
Well, Virginia just got in the top 25, and then they lost as soon as that happened.
Which is a joke. And then I don't think Northwestern or Wisconsin are that great, but I do kind of buy into Purdue for some reason still.
Well, Purdue is a good offense.
I think Purdue is a decent little football team. That is a mix of just crappiness all over the country. But there's your weak divisions in college football. Yeah, the South race, it is unbelievable how bad it is. Utah, USC, Arizona, and Arizona State all have three conference losses. We'll see how it all shakes out. We got a poll question on that. Who are you going to pick to win the South? And we'll give you that answer in the final hour.
This text, you have to admit, ASU looks way better than they did last year. I mean, Todd Graham won.
Hold on,
he had 10 win seasons twice, back-to-back at ASU.
So this year they are 5-4. Their losses to San Diego State, Washington, Colorado, and Stanford.
Weren't they 6-6 last year?
Last year, they went 7-5. Their losses were a 7-point loss at UCLA. They lost to Darnold in USC. They lost at Stanford by 10, lost to Texas Tech, and they lost to San Diego State.
The Utah game, I give them, they played well. They did a great job. USC, they benefited. They went against the third-string quarterback, and they almost lost that game. The Stanford game they lost. At Colorado they lost. They did take care of OSU.
The Michigan State game isn't overly impressive as it was when it happened, too, because they're
Michigan
not a great
State's
team.
That great.
Right.
I don't know. Maybe you think their offensive metrics are slightly better, and if they are, I'm not shocked by that. But again, how much of that is Enkeel Harry and Manny Wilkins and Eno Benjamin?
Yeah.
So to say that like they're better than they were last year, well, let's wait till they tie their record from last year of 7 wins.
Right. We'll see. Because they're 5-4 right now. They were 7-5 last year, so they got to finish 2-1.
They get UCLA
at Oregon,
at Arizona.
Yeah.
You go through that, you will actually be record wise better than you were last year. But right now, I don't know if they are better than last year.
I can see him finishing 8-8, and I can see him finish 8-4, and I can see him finishing 6-6.
Yeah, I could too. I could too.
That's the fun part about the South. Okay, Pro Football Challenge coming up top of the hour. Our picks in the National Football League. But I want to find out how much you guys know about the NFL season 1 week past the halfway point. Crunch time next on The Fam.
The pressure's on.
We have an opportunity to reestablish ourselves, get a big win. Not all is lost.
Who's feeling the heat?
Now we got to go home and make sure that we take care of business there. Shame on us if we don't.
It's crunch time. A look at the hottest topic in sports. Brought to you by Crunch Fitness. As low as $9.95 per month. No hassle, no pressure, no gimmicks, and no judgments.
Hey, Crunch Time, brought to you by Crunch Fitness. As low as $9.95 per month. No hassle, no pressure, no gimmicks, and no judgments. Is anybody at the Glorious House of Gaines today?
No, I had to carpool with the wife.
Ah, really? Car trouble?
No, she's working at the convention center today.
Oh.
So she's like, hey, can you just drop me off? I'm really bad in that area. I said, oh, okay. Kill my workout.
Bad in that area?
She's a terrible driver.
She just doesn't like driving around congested areas?
She forgets how to get to our house half the time.
Wow, that's really bad.
She is so directionally challenged. You could put her in a city, and as soon as you drop her out of the car and you leave, she has no idea where north, south, east, and west is. No idea. She is the worst.
Wandering aimlessly.
The worst directionally challenged person I've ever seen in my life.
How about that? All right, well, we got to get to our pro football picks. We'll do it top of the hour. Thursday night game is intriguing, and some Portland Diamond Project news all still to come. I did want to play a fun game with you guys. So we are now 1 week past the halfway point of the NFL season. Did you know that? We're 9 weeks in.
I do know that, yeah.
We're over the halfway point.
Football season's almost done.
And I want to test your knowledge of how this season has gone.
I'm going to fail miserably on this.
Statistically speaking.
Okay.
Okay? I'm going to rattle through some stats, and I want to see if you guys can name me the top three in these categories.
Oh, God. All right.
Okay?
These team or player categories?
Player, individual player categories. You can play along at home. 55305 is the bet of you today. Text line. We will start, ladies and gentlemen, with passing yards. Can you name me the three leaders at this point in the season in passing yards?
Patrick Mahomes.
He is number one.
Not going to say Drew Brees because he had like a 100-yard game last week. So
Drew Brees is not there.
Ryan Fitzpatrick.
No. Good because guess. He got benched. He was on pace probably, but then he didn't play for like two games.
Tom Brady.
Tom Brady is seventh.
Let's go.
Aaron Rodgers.
My man down in SoCal, Phillip Rivers.
Ooh. Nope. Jared Goff. Jared Goff is number two. Aaron Rodgers is number six.
So you got Mahomes, Goff.
You got one more to pick.
Cousins. Roethlisberger.
You just named the number four and number five.
Damn.
Number three is Matt Ryan.
Oh, yeah.
Matty Ice.
Yeah.
There's your top three. Cousins and Roethlisberger round out the top five. What about touchdown passes?
Mahomes.
Mahomes is number one with 29. There's only three guys with 20 touchdown passes so far.
Jared Goff.
Jared Goff has 20. He is number three.
Rivers.
No. Phillip Rivers is fourth with 19. He's knocking on the door. He's having a big year. 19 touchdowns, three picks.
Fitzpatrick.
Fitzpatrick, no.
I mean, I know Trubisky had 17. That six touchdown game, but has he had 14?
Oh, no. No. Get out of here.
Trubisky out of here.
Kirk Cousins. No, not Kirk Cousins.
Roethlisberger.
No.
Rodgers.
I'll give you one more guess. Not Rodgers. I don't think you're going to get this one, and I wouldn't have got it.
Okay, that's going to make me think a little bit.
It's an obvious name, but you wouldn't guess it. Tom Brady.
Nope.
Ah! Andrew Luck.
Damn it!
I knew 23 that. Touchdown passes
he's
this
second.
Year.
He's second. Yeah, he's at
23.
A good year.
He's right. He's behind Mahomes. Mahomes leads. Okay, we'll go to rushing category.
Okay.
Can you name me the top three rushing yard leaders in the NFL?
Oh, Todd Gurley.
Todd Gurley's numero uno.
Kareem Hunt.
Kareem Hunt is number three.
He'll be second.
Todd Gurley, by the way, leads this by 160-ish yards.
Yeah, he's almost at 1,000, isn't he?
He's at 868. Kareem Hunt has 683.
Is it James Conner?
It is James Conner.
Hey,
well
Joe.
Done, Joe.
What
How
we
about
did?
That?
706, rounding out the top five.
AP's
is
in there, isn't
Ezekiel
he?
Elliott is number four. Adrian Peterson is number five. What about rushing touchdowns?
Todd Gurley.
Todd Gurley is number one with 12.
Probably third or fourth in the MVP right now.
I mean, I feel like I've seen James Conner in the
end
zone
James
a lot.
Conner. James Conner is tied for second, so yeah, with nine. And who's the other guy he's tied with?
Kareem Hunt.
No, Kareem Hunt only has seven. One other back that has nine.
James White.
Not James White.
Alvin Kamara.
Alvin Kamara is correct.
Both guys on my fantasy team. Both guys have had a great season.
Knocking on their doors, Melvin Gordon and Kareem Hunt, each with seven, so
okay.
They're two behind. Okay, moving on to the wide receiver category. Can you name me the top three yardage wide receivers in the NFL?
So you got Julio.
Julio Jones is number two with 933.
Michael Thomas.
Michael Thomas is not. He's just outside. He's fourth. Ooh. 14 yards behind number three. The number one answer should be pretty obvious.
Odell?
No. Who was on the longest streak? In NFL history.
Thielen.
Adam
yeah.
Thielen.
What the hell are we
Always
thinking?
Forget about the white guy.
You know, always forget about the white guy.
I got to
guy.
Admit something. When you said wide receivers, I was like, okay. And then
he
Joe said
even,
Julio.
Right.
I couldn't think of names. Like, my mind was coming up with it. And when you're like, you should know this. I'm like, Odell
first
wasn't a great year.
No. He is sixth on this list. Yeah, Adam Thielen, almost 1,000 yards, 947. Julio, you mentioned 933.
And we haven't guessed number three,
number
have
three.
We?
So Michael Thomas is four. I'm
Michael Thomas is fourth. Odell is sixth.
Hill? Tyreek Hill?
No, Tyreek Hill is seventh.
Not there. Oh, Cup?
No.
Cooks.
Cooks is eighth.
Woods.
That's all I'm
hearing. Woods is ninth. I'll give you one more guess.
Let's go with Hopkins.
DeAndre Hopkins.
Yeah, that's correct. Right.
Good guess.
That's what I was going to guess earlier.
He is third. Michael Thomas fourth. Mike Evans is fifth. And touchdown catches. Top three in touchdown catches.
Definitely not Julio.
Not Julio. No, not on this list.
We have a...
Michael Thomas.
Michael Thomas, no.
I want to say Hopkins because he's been going on a little bit of a touchdown streak here recently.
Hopkins is one of the people tied for second with seven. You have one, two, three, four, five, six guys with seven.
Tyreek Hill.
Tyreek Hill is one of them.
Thielen.
Thielen is one of them. The other two, I don't know. You're not going to get
T.Y.
the other
Hilton?
Ones. No. That's a decent guess, but he's not up there.
Bunches.
No.
DJ Moore.
One of them is a teammate of Julio Jones.
Oh, Ridley.
Calvin Ridley has seven.
He was their guy for a long time.
Think Aaron Rodgers.
Devontae Adams.
Devontae Adams. Yep. And then Andrew Luck with all those touchdown passes. Who are they going to?
Marlon Mack?
I got to be 100% real with you. I guess T.Y. Hilton. I don't know their other target's name.
Throwing to his tight end, Eric Ebron, has seven as well. So there's your category with seven. You have not named me the leader, though. Who's the leader?
Zach Ertz?
No.
Yeah, we're receiving touchdowns here.
He drives real fast.
Oh, Brown.
Antonio Brown with nine.
You can't give it away like that.
Well, we're already running out of time here, you know?
Oh, time schmime.
Okay, last one. I want to go to team categories, okay? This is it. We're going to do a total offense, total defense.
Okay.
Can you name me the top three and bottom three total offenses in the NFL?
Oh, geez,
just in total yardage.
So top three.
Titans. Are you going bottom?
Duh.
Yes, the Titans are 30th.
You got the Bills.
Jacksonville.
The Bills are 31st.
Jacksonville.
Jacksonville's not in there.
Jets.
No.
Lions.
No.
Gosh, I was just looking at these offensive touchdowns and stuff yesterday, too.
No, another rookie quarterback.
Oh, Arizona.
Arizona's bottom of the league.
Okay, top
three.
Head and
shoulders, top three. These should be pretty easy.
Kansas City, Saints.
And Rams.
Yeah.
Rams and Kansas City, yes. Not New Orleans, though.
Atlanta?
No, you probably won't get this one.
Carolina?
Tampa Bay.
That's what I was going to say. Fitzmagic.
Fitzmagic.
Fitzmagic, baby.
Fitzmagic. Isn't that crazy? They have the number with all the yardage he put up. All right, last one, total defense. Can you name me the three best statistically yardage-wise defenses in the bottom three?
This is not yards a game. This is just total yards given up.
Total yards given up.
I would have said the Redskins last week, but they gave up like 40 points and 500 yards, so probably knocked them out of the top three last week.
Houston.
Houston is not.
Wow.
Houston is 19th.
Denver?
Denver is not.
Seattle.
Denver is near the bottom.
Going to go Carolina?
No.
Seattle?
Seattle is not.
Jeez, dude, we suck.
Seattle.
Minnesota.
Are we giving up? No. No, not Minnesota.
Buffalo.
You think last year, who had the dominant defense last year?
The Yags.
The Yags are number one.
That's a dumb metric.
They're only
to
giving
measure.
Up 313 yards per game.
And yet they suck.
And yet they, because of Blake
Chicago.
Bortles. Chicago's number three.
Yep, there you go.
And the last one played on Monday Night Football.
The Cowboys.
The Cowboys are number two.
Ugh.
Only giving up 317 yards per game.
Give me Philly all day this weekend.
Bottom three, I'll just give them to you.
I thought we guessed them.
No, those were the top three.
Top three defenses.
Oh, those are the top three. Defenses. Bottom three.
Bottom three defenses.
Atlanta?
No, they're close to 26.
Tampa Bay, for
Tampa's
sure.
Close. They're 27th.
Oh, wow.
Who's worse than those guys? What about the Rams?
The Rams are not. They're 21st.
The Chiefs.
The Chiefs are dead last.
Yeah, they've been
yards
getting blown
allowed, about 430 per game.
San Francisco?
San Francisco is 23rd.
Giants?
No.
Arizona?
No.
Wow, we do
those
suck.
Are 16th and 17th. The 30th and 31st ranked defenses yardage-wise, Cincinnati and Cleveland.
I think I told you the Cincinnati stat a while ago, and it surprised us.
Yeah, about how bad their defense
is. Because I was like, oh, you'll never – it's not a team you think right. about. And Cincinnati was second to worst.
I'll give you guys a B on your NFL Week 9 knowledge. That's not bad. You did okay.
I probably would have been way worse if Joe wasn't here.
That was good teamwork. Teamwork make the dream work. Crunch Time brought to you by Crunch Fitness, as low as $9.95 per month. No hassle, no pressure, no gimmicks, and no judgments. Thanks for playing along at home. We got a Thursday night football game to talk to. Timbers, Blazers, both in action tonight. Some Portland Diamond Project news, but we'll start with our NFL picks. The Pro Football Challenge is next on 1080 The Fam.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.